You're listening to Vatican Radio. The way a country responds to the needs of migrants and refugees is a thermometer of the well-being of that society. That's the view of Canadian Jesuit Father Michael Cherney, recently appointed as Undersecretary of the Vatican's new Department for Integral Human Development. Alongside Italian Scalabrini Father Fabio Baggio, Father Michael took up his new post on January the 1st, in charge of the section dealing with refugees, migrants and survivors of human trafficking. Answering directly to Pope Francis, he sees his modest but ambitious mission as helping the Church to accompany forced migrants at all stages of their challenging and often perilous journeys. As the child of a refugee family himself, Father Michael believes that with a little bit of sharing of the enormous resources available throughout the world, countries can very comfortably and very securely and very profitably provide for the needs of all people on the move. I talked to Father Michael to find out more about the work and the vision of this new Vatican office.
Integral human development really goes back to Vatican II and Gaudium et Spes and the whole approach of the Church to the relationship between the development of peoples and salvation history. And over the years, different pontifical councils were set up to meet specific needs. But with Evangelii Gaudium and Laudato Si, the Holy Father perceives very clearly that all these dimensions are better handled as dimensions of or aspects of integral human development rather than as separate pontifical councils or things like that. So you have a new approach and a new way of bringing the gospel to society under this new title. And within that, one of the obvious areas of real concern in the world and in many parts of the world and in many different ways throughout the world are people who, we could say most generally, people who are forced out of their homes and or people who can't go where they want to go. So there's a whole area of human mobility which is under duress. It's not new, but it is remarkable and it is urgent.
And it is a top priority for Pope Francis personally, isn't it?
It is a top priority for somebody who comes from a migrant family, a family which, as far as I know the story, was properly and warmly welcomed in Argentina about a century ago, I guess. So it's an urgent topic because it's one of those thermometers, I would say, of the health and well-being of a society. How does a society handle this whole area? Whether they are, as we say, producing, whether these people are in transit, or whether the people are arriving. And if societies don't respond up to the mark of human dignity, there's something seriously wrong. And that's, I think, what makes him passionate about this topic.
Tell us then very specifically about the work of your new section. What do you see as its main goals?
Well, our section, called Migrants and Refugees, carries on the work of two programs of the former Pontifical Council for Migrants and Itinerant Peoples, namely refugees and migrants. Migrants in the sense of forced migrants. Now, there's people who are moving, you might say, against their will or against their wishes. So people forced in one way or another, either driven or otherwise obliged to flee and to leave their homes. Also, people who are trafficked. So we're concerned with people whose human rights and dignity, whose security, whose basic hold on life, and whose basic reasons for hope are under extreme duress or stress. And I say extreme because, coming from a refugee family myself, I have some sense of the pressures that people are under. And I would say those listening who are listening about something they haven't lived themselves is to just to appreciate what it means, really to come to that momentous decision as a individual, but especially as a family, we've got to get out of here. We've got to get out of here not because so much we will hope for something better, but because here we cannot survive anymore. And that's a very serious and in many cases a very sad decision. And if I could sum up the mission of our section on migrants and refugees, our, in a sense, modest but in a sense ambitious mission is for people to feel and to experience the accompaniment of the Church when they are at any stage or phase of this itinerary. the church of the sending nation or the sending society? How can the church accompany those people in its area that are forced to flee? The church in the areas of transit, how can we be present and lend a helping hand, if we can, to the people who are crossing our territory, crossing our diocese, our parish, on their way somewhere else for whatever the reasons are? And finally, the church of the welcoming place, the place which is receiving, and, well, I use the word welcoming, but the church of the place which is receiving and which really should welcome. As we would so much want to be warmly welcomed wherever we go if we were forced to flee, so we have this Christ-like mandate to welcome those who come to us.
This is already a priority for churches in many different countries, it seems, and has been for some time, often in the face of the hostility of governments and other official state organizations.
Exactly, and that's why what our work as this small section here at the Holy See is to be present with the church as they are responding in each of these phases, as they are responding, and to discover what is being done, what could be done, what would be helpful, what would be more supportive, or just to celebrate that it's being handled as best as possibly can. But so there's no prior judgment that people are not doing it, but there is the fact that we don't know. There isn't as much coordination or sharing of experience or pooling of resources as we would like, and maybe that's where we can be of help.
You've long been involved in social justice issues in many different parts of the world, but you talk about this special connection you have because of your own family history as a refugee or as a migrant family. Tell us a bit more about that and what it means to you.
To me, it's very mysterious. Obviously, I'm of a certain age, as they say, discreetly, and so I'm not sure I ever expected to have yet another mission. But now it turns out that for the first time in my life, I actually have a mission which corresponds also with the first phase of my life. And yes, my brother and I, with our parents, we were refugees from Central Europe after World War II, and we were welcomed and warmly welcomed in a rather bewildering place called Canada. And as they say, the rest is history.
From Czechoslovakia, your family came, didn't they?
That's right. So there we arrived in the very late 40s in Montreal. And I have some appreciation of what went into the decision, what went into the planning and preparing of the trip, and what went into the trip itself. And even as a two-year-old, I think I maybe absorbed some of the anxiety and some of the tension, like the sense that the stakes were very high. And so I can translate that, if you like, when I see the picture of a person or a family on the move or forced to flee. I know that they've made the best possible decision they could. This is not, they didn't do it lightly, they didn't do it foolishly. They are opting for the least worst solution for their very bad situation. And God knows they deserve all the help, support, sympathy, and prayer that they can get.
Your parents were fleeing in the context of the Second World War. Can you tell us anything more about their situation, their background, their family history there?
I think that the striking thing is that it was so ordinary. These were ordinary people living ordinary lives in an ordinary city of an ordinary country. And suddenly, your world implodes, explodes, and you either say, well, I will stay and hope for the best, but that's in quotes, or you make this decision. And that's what I admire. And, of course, I'm grateful that my parents had the courage and the gumption and the resourcefulness to decide. But I'm also very grateful to the people about whom I know a little bit who helped us along the way. And I don't know if I'd be talking to you today, even if the decision had been made, if we hadn't gotten the help.
Can you tell me anything more about this help?
Just people, none of whom were in particularly happy circumstances themselves, shared what little they had, whether it was security or connectedness or resources, or who took risks for us. I'm glad they did, and I hope that others, I know that others do the same for people on the move. I think this is what the Holy Father is seeking. It's not asking us to mount some huge program that's going to mobilize unheard of resources or solutions. I think what he wants us to do is to help the hearts and minds, the hands and feet of people everywhere, especially Christians, but also others, to share and offer what they have. And with a little bit of sharing of the enormous resources that are available throughout the world, we can, I know, very comfortably and very securely and very profitably accommodate all the people who are on the move. And that's what I hope we will do.
He has set a very strong example himself by welcoming these Syrian refugee families into the Vatican itself, hasn't he? How important do you think is that very concrete action to show that actually everybody in their own way can do something?
The reason I think it's very important is because I don't know how often I've been visiting different church facilities for one reason or another, not connected with this job, where people will show me some room or some space, and they will say more or less whimsically, well, I suppose we could open these doors to refugees, couldn't we? And I do agree, of course, they could. And so I think it's already beginning to have a good effect, and it will continue to have a good effect. And I don't know of any church institution which has opened its doors which doesn't testify to the great, great, great grace that they have received. I don't know of anybody who regrets having done it. So I hope that more people will do it.
This is certainly a difficult time to be beginning a new ministry like this, if you like, in the sense of the current political climate, people talking about insecurity, perhaps toxic fears about immigrants in a way that perhaps we haven't seen, well, maybe since the Second World War.
Well, maybe it is difficult, but maybe it's not. I see it in a way as not difficult in this sense, that maybe more of the truth is on the table. Yes, the fears are toxic, but it's not as if there weren't fears before. I don't know when migration and taking refuge began, but I think it goes somewhere back to the beginning. So this is not new. And I would be surprised if people didn't react with some fear, apprehension, defensiveness, negativity at the arrival of newcomers always and everywhere. So it's not a bizarre or idiosyncratic reaction. It's normal. And if it has become headlines because of the attitudes or remarks of some leaders, maybe it's worse if it were somehow politically correctly repressed and unspoken. So I have the feeling that our beginning the section on migrants and refugees comes at a moment where people are, in a sense, on a higher kind of alert, are willing to entertain thoughts about this topic. At least they're not neglecting it. And I very much hope, and if I can, I would even pledge, that our section wants to be of help to everyone in the church. So we're not the section only for churches which find it opportune to welcome, but also for churches which, given the experience of their peoples or the stance of their governments, are part of a misapprehension, caution, even sad experiences and so forth. Those have to be taken on board as well.
The tension is very much between the principles, the rights and the dignity of migrants and refugees that the Pope talks about constantly, and the problems within host countries trying to take in and to provide for the newcomers without threatening security, cultural identity or stability, as the Pope put it to diplomats recently. That's where the real difficulty lies, isn't it?
That's right. And just an initial thing is notice even as you asked your question. On the one hand, you talked about people. That's the people who are arriving. And on the other hand, you mentioned a number of ideas, concepts, policies, which are not people. These are other things. They might be real or unreal. But I think what we need is a focus and an emphasis on the people themselves. And while it's true that there are other concerns, and that's government's business, they are not decisive. That's not the decisive concern. Those are the ancillary concerns, the surrounding concerns. But the central issue is that human beings are forced to flee from one place and have the right, according to the UN, not just according to the church, but according to the UN, they have the right to find another place. And we need to help that happen. And the other concerns will take care of themselves. There's lots of people working on them. But our role is, with all due respect, to keep the focus on the people who really need a place to settle down, a place to restart their lives. That, in my opinion, that is decisive when we're facing a question of a family, of a person, of an unaccompanied minor.
Let me put it another way. It's the concerns then of the family on the move, in conflict sometimes with the concerns of families back home who fear for the loss of their jobs, the loss of security, healthcare, the ability to provide for their own children. If you want to put it in terms of people-to-people issues, how do you resolve that?
Well, I think that it's to be resolved by noticing that the people on the move are real people with real needs. And that the fears are generated in a variety of ways. They're generated by the media, they're generated by, you might say, mythological thinking, they're generated by very legitimate concerns for security, which are on the account of the local authorities. This is the refugees have nothing to do with a country's unemployment rate. The unemployment rate is the fruit of the policies and the lack of policies of the host country, period. Now, you bring some refugees in, maybe you're raising the question of unemployment or unemployability or obsolete business or industry, but that's not a refugee's problem. A refugee's problem is it needs a place to stay, a place to live, and eventually a place to work. And even people who are in very great difficulty in their own country and in their own culture, when faced humanly with the needs and the desires and the resources of people who are arriving, their fears and their apprehensions fade away because they are secondary. The phenomenon of the movement of peoples is a net gain from a business point of view. So let's just set aside this sort of false business language about, or false economic language about the cost of refugees. They're not a cost, they're a resource and they're a net gain. And let's focus then on humane, reasonable, generous policies. And there I have more faith in local communities, parishes, the mayors of small to medium-sized towns, or even of big cities, and other civic society groups which can offer a generous and multidimensional response to refugees. The more people-to-people the question and the answer can be, the better off everyone will be.
My thanks there to Father Michael Czerny, Joint Under Secretary of the new Vatican Department for Integral Human Development.